Gisagi over on The Limiting Factor, so we'll talk about his takeaways. He's published some new details from his ongoing teardown. We've also got some news on Giga Texas and Giga Berlin. Tesla has opened up Q2 earnings questions for earnings next week, and we have a couple other items as well. So starting off with the stock, another relatively quiet day as the muted CPI reaction seems to continue. Tesla was up 0.5% today, closing just below $715 per share, and the NASDAQ basically flat on the day. We did get the producer price index report this morning, so just to quickly cover that, it was an increase, unsurprisingly an increase year over year, but up 11.3%. So that was ticking up from April and May, but not quite as high as what we had seen for the PPI in March, unlike the CPI, which of course eclipsed that previous March number. But same thing as we had talked about with the CPI, for core PPI, so excluding food and energy as well as trade services here for the PPI, that increased 6.4% month over month, or sorry, year over year, which was also declining from May, just like we had seen in the core PPI. So even though the headline number is rising, like we saw for CPI, we are seeing a slight decline there for the core PPI. So that increased 0.3% month over month, which was below the estimate, even though the headline number did rise higher than the estimate. So sort of mixed results, mixed readings there from the PPI, just like with the CPI, even though sort of all the metrics on the CPI did come in ahead of expectations, you still started to see a little bit of a decline in some areas. So interesting there. Getting into the 4680 news. So this is pretty exciting stuff here. So as we know, Jordan has been doing this teardown. First, just like go to Jordan's channel, like this video, show Jordan some love. He's been getting some trolls like complaining about his longer video before. I don't think people really understand like how difficult and challenging it is to get to this information and to share it and recap it, research it all. So just want to start off with that. Please do that. It's awesome that Jordan is willing to share this. But anyway, this is really exciting because what Jordan has found here is that the estimated energy density, and this is an estimate because of how they took apart the cell, they were working with, you know, not an entire cell discharging in its entirety, but they have a relatively good level of confidence that the energy density for these 4680 cells is falling somewhere between 272 to 296 watt hours per kilogram. So that is comparable or even superior to the 2170 cells, which, as you can see here, are listed at somewhere between 263 to 276 watt hours per kilogram. Jordan said that they're probably leaning more towards the lower end of this range for the 4680, which would put it to be probably relatively comparable in energy density to the 2170, which might not at first sound like it's all that exciting of news, but what you have to consider with the 4680 is that the 4680 casing, which is a factor in terms of the energy density, so the canister that the 4680 battery materials are in, that is a structural element. So as Jordan already said, these are thick cells, right? So there's a lot of weight in just the casing here. So for the energy density to be on par or even superior with that additional weight from the structural element is definitely exciting for where things are at so far. So I'm really happy to see that. I want to walk through a little bit of math that this kind of gives us the capability to do. We'll know more when we do get the number of cells that are actually in the vehicle from Monroe. Obviously, they're doing that teardown too. And then we can kind of pair this information from Jordan with that information from Monroe and really figure out what the pack sizes are, what the energy capacity is. But before we have that, we kind of have to just work on some assumptions. So what Jordan was saying is that this energy density here was pretty similar to a rumor that we had had previously that there was about 98 watt hours per cell. And if there are 100 or 828 cells in a 4680 Model Y pack from Texas, that could mean that the battery pack energy capacity is something more like 81 kilowatt hours versus what we had previously heard from Tesla, or what we had previously had leaked was that it was around 69 kilowatt hours, and that seems to line up better with the actual range and usable energy capacity. So getting into like a couple of the scenarios here before we really have that number of cells from Monroe, I want to compare with the weight for the long range Model Y from Fremont versus the weight that we had had from Spoken Reviews had shared out their weight on the, sorry, I just wanted to make sure everything was working okay here. They had shared out the weights. Spoken Reviews had shared out the weights on the Texas-made pack, which was about 4,200 pounds. So it is a weight savings here. Let me pull up just a little bit of math here. It's not too complicated. So what we're talking about there is, you know, 143-pound difference. We're going to convert over into kilograms because it's all comparable then. So it's a 65-kilogram difference. If both cells in both vehicles here are roughly 272 watt-hours per kilogram, which, remember, if we go back, that's basically the low end of the 4680 range and the higher end of the 2170 range. Feels like a pretty good estimate for now. If the pack sizes are indeed different, and we're talking about a 69 kilowatt hour pack from Texas and an 82 kilowatt hour pack from Fremont, then about 48 kilograms of that 65 kilogram reduction would just be from including fewer cells, right? So if you have fewer battery cells, you have less energy capacity, you're also gonna have less weight. The vehicle should be a little bit more efficient, right? Just from that reduction in weight. So that could be one possibility. That would leave us with just 17 kilograms being reduced in weight from the combination of the structural pack and the front casting that we know that Texas is doing. So that would be seemingly a little bit low, especially because we know some of the weight in that structural pack is already being accounted for in the canister of these cells, which is included in our energy density number. Now, the other possibility that we could be looking at here, if the 4680 is on the higher end of that energy density range, would possibly be both packs sitting around that 80, 81 kilowatt hour range. And potentially Tesla could be software limiting that. They could be having just a really big buffer as they learn more about the 4680 cells, what their life cycle is going to look like, what their degradation is going to look like. There could be a plausible explanation to have that big buffer. If they're, you know, at that higher energy density capacity, we could be looking at basically a 27 kilogram reduction just from the cells here and the energy density possible improvement on the 4680. And that would then leave 38 kilograms less from the combination of the pack and the casting. To me, that actually seems not that entire scenario, but the reduction in weight from the pack and the casting, I would expect it to be a little bit higher than what we're seeing in this first scenario. So this just kind of gives us the range of possible outcomes here. And again, once we get that information from Monroe in terms of the number of cells that are actually in this pack, it'll give us a much better feel for, you know, where along the spectrum that we are. But I think right now, as we look at this, both of these scenarios seem not outside of the realm of possibility. Of course, the other scenario that isn't covered here is that, okay, they're just the same energy density, and they're both 81 kilowatt hour packs. That would just mean that you're getting the entire weight savings from the structural pack, which would obviously be very exciting as well. So those are kind of the scenarios that we have. I know that's like a lot of math and it's a little bit difficult to understand, but the main point is that if the energy density is comparable with the added weight from the structural element, Tesla has made some advancements here with the 4680. Even though the overall vehicle efficiency doesn't look like it's necessarily improving much, that would be a big benefit. And that's what's, you know, most important at this point in time. So a couple of things here that Jordan also pointed out that are very interesting to learn is that, and this is actually pretty exciting for the future as well, the 4680 battery that Jordan had, this was from about 6 months ago, so Tesla's probably made some changes since then, but the 4680 that they looked at did not have any silicon in the anode. So we know that Tesla over time has kind of implemented that. That has improved energy density from a range of maybe 5 to 10%. So for Tesla to be able to hit equivalent energy densities with both the headwinds of having that structural weight with the cell canister and the headwind of not having any silicon in the anode, those are both setting back the energy density. And yet Tesla is finding a way to make it be equivalent or even superior. So that's a very exciting element of this, because Tesla can hopefully over time find ways to implement that silicon and drive that energy density up. So that's exciting. The other thing here with the anode, or I guess let me come back to that, but how Jordan thinks Tesla is able to do this is he thinks that they're able to get a lot more thickness in the electrode. And what that is doing is creating more active materials that are actually contributing to the energy density of the cell. So that's one of the reasons they're able to do this despite the extra weight from the canister and the lack of silicon in the anode. Which again, that hopefully leaves a lot of room for improvement, which Drew on the, I think, Q4 earnings call had mentioned that there was still, a lot of those possibilities out there. The other thing that's very interesting here is that in terms of dry battery electrode process, which we know should be a big cost-saving element for the production here, Jordan did confirm that this is being used for the anode, but not for the cathode yet. So Tesla may still be working through that process for the dry battery electrode, but it is at least being used in part with the electrode here with the anode. So it's good to have confirmation of that. And I think that's kind of the biggest point too, right? So it's exciting that the energy density is comparable or even superior despite some of those handicaps. And then it's also exciting that Tesla is using some of these cost-saving methods. It's obviously a bigger cell, which should make it cheaper to manufacture. And Tesla is doing this in-house, so there should be numerous cost savings, and Tesla is probably already on par with some of the best cells in the world with just this first iteration. So I know the initial release of the vehicle might feel a little bit underwhelming. We still have a lot to learn to, figure out if some other things are hiding here, but there are definitely some exciting underlying things for Tesla to continue to build on with the 4680 battery and pack. So I guess just having this information, if anyone was feeling a little bit disappointed, this should make you feel quite a bit better about where Tesla sits with that. All right, so let's move on. We've got a couple of updates on Giga Texas and Giga Berlin. First here on Giga Texas, Joe Tegmeyer, who does drone flyover videos, keeps a really close eye on the ongoings there at Texas, said that Tesla with car transporters is right now moving more than 150 cars per day. If that is the case for 7 days a week, that would be just over 1,000 per week, which Joe also says is the information that they're nearing 1,000 cars per week in terms of the production ramp. So, of course, Tesla did tweet out that they had hit that rate at Berlin. We haven't seen a tweet like that for Texas yet. Doesn't mean they're going to do it for both factories, but they may. And it sounds like Joe is saying that they are getting close to that level currently. We'd had some rumors that maybe they were getting, 2,000 or even 5,000 from Electrek. It doesn't seem like that has been the case, so I'm not really sure. I wish they would clarify some of that reporting, but even if we're at 1,000 per week, that would still be pretty exciting and hopefully continue to ramp pretty quickly from this level, because we know they just added the 2170 long range there to Texas. Right, as for Giga Berlin, the other news that has been getting a lot of attention today is that apparently a lot of people are talking about how Tesla has been actually granted approval to sell the test production vehicles that they were producing when they had that, limited approval from Germany to kind of start test production. Tesla made maybe up to a couple thousand vehicles there. Obviously, it'd be kind of wasteful to have to recycle all those vehicles if they are ready for sale. So Tesla had asked for permission to do that, and they have been actually granted that. So that's what this report is confirming. This is actually kind of old news. We had talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Remember, I had actually changed my Q2 estimate up a little bit based on news that those vehicles were being sold to employees. So not anything new, but has been getting quite a bit of attention today, and I guess good to have some second confirmation of that from RBB here via Electrek. All right, next, as we head into earnings week next week, Tesla has now opened up the question and answer portion for retail investors for Q2. So you can go to, saytechnologies.com. You can submit questions. Unfortunately, at this point, if you submit, it's probably out of the running just because a lot of the questions are early questions that get asked. But you can go and you can vote, and that ends up making a difference. Like a lot of times, these will get shuffled around in the week preceding earnings. So still plenty of time to go in and vote on questions. I think these questions could be a lot better. I think last quarter, the questions were actually pretty solid coming from Say. This quarter, we have questions, the Cybertruck. Elon just talked about that being about a year out in his last interview. There's a question in here that thankfully has fallen out of the top five on the stock split. Like we don't need to waste these opportunities on questions like that. That's about all I can say on that, because Tesla doesn't want us to kind of like promote our own questions. They changed that, as we had talked about a few quarters back. So I don't want to try to be overly influential, but I mean, if there's clearly stuff that they've already answered, it's just kind of a waste of a slot. So, yeah, go ahead and vote on that. Next couple of things, really quick here, just a couple of analyst updates. Adam Jonas from Morgan Stanley did drop his price target on Tesla today by $50 per share. I think it's at 1,050. I might be wrong on that though. I can't remember exactly where they were at, but lowered his price target by $50 a share. I don't have that note, so I'm not sure of the justification. I'm guessing it was probably a weighted average cost of capital adjustment. We have seen quite a few of those from analysts. It tends to happen as interest rates are increasing. And then as you can see here, Adam Jonas was also today talking about how the Apple Car is going to be a game changer, which obviously not an opinion that I've agreed with in the past, but those are kind of the updates from Jonas today. Yesterday, we had talked about the initiation of coverage from a new analyst, so William Stein from Truist, initiating with a $1,000 price target. At that time, I didn't have any information on what that note had said, but we do have an update here. He, in the note, said that they have a buy rating on Tesla. Tesla's development has been a remarkable success story. Overcoming obstacles in traditional, established automotive and energy industries, Tesla developed innovative technology, built scale, and achieved industry-leading profitability. Still, we believe the company's best days in terms of volume production, product innovation, and especially AI innovations are still down the road. Specifically, we expect Tesla's unit production share to capture the pole position among automotive manufacturers, AI innovations to turbocharge Tesla's core EV growth, Tesla's operating margin to expand beyond investors' current expectations. And pole position there obviously would mean they expect Tesla to become the leader in, you know, vehicle sales worldwide. So just wanted to pass that along because, again, we didn't have much information on that initiation yesterday, and it's always kind of good to hear from new analysts picking up the stock. All right, last thing for today then, we've got a report here from Cox Automotive on the first half of the year, or I guess Q2 specifically, here for U.S. vehicle registrations in the United States. So they talk a little bit about Tesla's market share. They talk a little bit about EV market share in general. A couple of interesting things here. Maybe not super surprising, but Tesla has now taken, I think they've had this for actually a decent amount of time, but Tesla was the top selling luxury brand in the United States, surpassing not just electric vehicles, but all vehicles from Audi, BMW, Cadillac, Lexus, Mercedes-Benz, etc. So really nice to see that. They do point out that Tesla's overall market share in the EV market did drop a little bit, just as a lot of new competitors come in. We've talked about this and the math behind it a long time ago. We walked through how this could look if Tesla continues to grow at 50%. If everyone else comes in and grows at that rate, you've got the total market growing much more quickly. So this should be expected, but the important part is just that Tesla's growth rate continues. Even if they have a smaller share of a larger market, that's certainly what they're aiming for over time. So no major concern on that. The other interesting thing is that EV sales did grow pretty massively in the second quarter. So last year, electric vehicle market share, and this is just battery electric vehicles, was 2.7% for Q2 2021. This year, that has increased to 5.6% for Q2 2022, and that is a new record for the United States. So really good to see that more than a doubling in EV market share in just the last year. All right, so I think that is it for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Friday, July 15th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.